Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny David Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny David Moore every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
This is Bob Gross and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob Gross and Tom. Show of record is underway, which means your day has just gotten that much better. Welcome. Coming up, we are going to hit everything that's sitting in front of us. You got the Masters going on. You've got Seahawks news, perhaps a little controversy. We've got John Clayton joining us at 2 o'clock. And the Mariners, I don't know if you knew this, Gross, it was really cold in Minnesota yesterday.
Yes, I was saying to Bob before the show, Tom, that I turned on Root right at the beginning of their pregame and kept count. For a while, as to how many times they mentioned that it was cold. And after 20 minutes and the count got to 40, I says, all right.
That's all they talked about.
That's all they talked
That's
about.
All they talked about.
That's all they talked about. From every angle, all the time, constantly. I got it. It's cold.
Right. Other than the eagle landing on Paxton's shoulder, all I kept seeing were shots of guys wearing, like, ski masks.
Yep.
Throughout the game. So, yeah.
Understood it was cold.
It was quite cold.
They wanted to make sure everyone knew, though. They really wanted to ram that message home.
What are they worried about? They were inside. You think they had the windows open?
I heard Sims say absolutely not.
That'd be insane.
Well, there are some guys who are insane like that. Isn't Rabel insane like that? Doesn't he like to have the window open?
I don't know if they keep him open there or not for the sound or whatever, but I know in the press box of the Mariners that Tim Heavily will look at you like you're a big sissy if you want those windows closed, which they won't close, by the way.
Well, there are some guys who are nuts about it.
In the press box, I know they always keep it open. But in the broadcast booth, those things open and shut depending on the day.
You would think so.
Kevin Kremen used to keep a heater in there.
When it's 30 degrees, it's time to have them closed.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. So it was cold, and the Mariners' bats were cold. They could not. This team in the last two games with runners in scoring position have been atrocious.
Yeah, but that doesn't bother me as much as other problems could. I mean, their bats weren't cold. They weren't getting key hits. But that's not going to – I mean, just the mathematics tells you that's not going to continue.
No, it's two games, but it's just frustrating to
it
watch.
Was definitely
when you get,
frustrating.
When you see opportunities, you see guys that you're counting on, like Kyle Seager, come up to the plate and not come through. I mean, yesterday –
Well, that was everyone.
Yeah, it's true, but not everybody is counted on the way that he is in
right.
The sense of what he's being paid, what you expect from him. And I'm not – it's certainly not all his fault by any stretch. The team as a whole – past two games have just been flat out bad with runners in scoring position. Now, one game you had just a disastrous performance from Felix Hernandez, which we didn't discuss.
Now that's a different story.
That was atrocious.
That you're worried about, even though I mean you don't want to get any more worried than you were excited about his first start. But this is the issue you have with Felix.
Up down up down up down.
Is that what it's going to be like? Is who is he? I mean, that's a legit concern to me.
I'll tell you what, I'd take some middle of the road performances rather than those extremes.
Exactly.
I mean that.
That's what Mike Leake and Marco Gonzalez are for.
Yeah.
Right. But that's a legit concern, I think. I don't know that I'm really concerned about the runners with scoring position. I think that'll take care of itself.
There's going to be streaks during the year where that happens anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing. The worst thing is when you're not hitting with runners in scoring position and you're like 0 for 4. Right?
What do you mean?
Meaning you're not getting hits at all. There were 2 for 17, I think, yesterday.
Right. Yes.
I mean, a lot of guys are hitting. They had plenty of opportunities, and Bob is right. It's frustrating as all get up that they don't come through, but at least they're hitting the ball. It's when you're not even getting the chances, when you're not even getting, you know, when you're 0 for 4 or 1 for 5 or something like that, you're not even getting runners in scoring position, then you got a concern.
And it's that much more frustrating when you had the Twins basically beat, Paxton had them beat, and then one bad pitch, boom, it's a tie game.
Yeah.
Right? Because
it's two runs. So, I mean, he's basically, you were in a position where he needed to be perfect.
Basically, yeah.
Which isn't. Fair. I mean, yeah, no. He's your guy we look at as the ace, and you know, he made a mistake, but it wasn't like he gave up 6 runs. He gave up 2 runs.
He was fine.
He pitched well enough to win.
He should, for anybody who was worried about his first start, that start should have eased your mind.
Exactly.
He looked really good.
Yeah, he was fine. My only problem with that is that I'm not sure how many games he's actually going to start in a given season because he hasn't done it more than 24 times. So
also true.
Right, so for the 20 or 25 times or so that you actually have him on the mound, you should take advantage of that.
Yeah, exactly.
You take advantage of any start like that, you know, when you got a guy who's dealing like that. And you're hitting the ball.
But the past two games, 3 for 29
with runners in scoring
position. I mean, that's not going
to
continue.
I don't want to end the year with Paxton, you know, with a 7-8 record with a bunch of no decisions and an ERA in the twos.
Although Mariner fans know that that's a possibility.
Because we've seen it with Felix for
so many
years
and even guys before him, but Felix
was his whole existence.
You know what?
For so many moons, it was his whole existence.
This team is better than those teams.
They have a much better lineup.
Yeah, this team should be able to at least try to contend. Some of those teams that Felix was on, I think he won the Cy Young in the 100-loss season.
13-12, and they had no hitting. They had no offense whatsoever.
Right, so there's really, unless it's just a fluky thing, there's no excuse for that. I don't expect that to continue either. A little worried about the bullpen.
A little bit. Yeah, a little.
Yeah, I mean,
well, Nick Vinson got hosed yesterday, and you know.
Yeah, I don't know what was up with the ump.
He had a bad day, missed a ton of calls, yeah. And he certainly missed that 0-2 pitch. I mean, I don't blame the Mariners for being upset about that.
Funny to hear Blowers go, that was right down the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just sort of incredulous. Like, what do you want?
You didn't even need to see the little pitch, that thing, to know that that was a perfect pitch. And he threw the same pitch, and the guy hit it, and, you know, you can understand the frustration there. But that goes back to, hey, if you're not 2-for-17 with runners in scoring position, you're not in the situation where that – and you didn't score anyway.
Right.
Now, you may have had a different attitude about I love the line about – I was thinking the exact same thing. Hey, Fernando Rodney pitching the ninth with a one-run lead, we'll take our chances.
Yeah.
And D. Yep. Gordon and lead-off batter coming up, you only need one run instead of two. I can understand that point. But they kind of put themselves in that position.
Let's go back, since we didn't get a chance after the Felix start. We were off the next day, so we didn't even get a chance. We don't need to get deep into that game. But that's a game where they hit as well. They had 10 hits in that game.
Yeah.
But they were
yep.
they were
scattered.
But they were 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position. So you did hit the ball. You had 10 total hits. But that was a game that was out of hand immediately. I mean, the Giants put up 3 in the first inning, 1 in the second, and then 5 in the fifth. I mean, Felix was just god-awful.
He had no command.
4 innings, 8 earned runs, 5 walks, which is more troubling than anything. Just couldn't find the zone. 1K.
No command of his fastball. And if he doesn't have command of his fastball, forget it.
Why would his age affect his command?
I don't know that his age – I don't know if this is – you chalk this up to age.
I chalk it up to his lack of pitching in spring training.
That's a better excuse to me. Although, if we hadn't seen this before, which we have, maybe not to this extreme, you know, a lack of consistency. But we wondered after that first game. He says, well, he had command of every pitch.
Right.
If he has command of every pitch, he's unhittable.
Right, he didn't have it that night. So where did he manage to dig it out of?
It's the most frustrating thing in the world, isn't it? With 5 days later, he's got no command.
Yeah, with
he can't control his fastball. Can't put it where he wants to put it, and that's it.
And this is a pitcher who's not learning the game. He's already done this for years successfully. Like, where does that go? I can understand going from 96 mile an hour to 92 to 90. That happens, and having to mix up the pitches.
I don't think it's that so much. I think it's hitters realize it, that he can't control. He can't place his fastball where he wants. He just sit on breaking pitches, and a lot of times he needs to be effective. He needs to throw that changeup for a ball. Mm. Guys don't swing at it when they know he can't place his fastball. They're not worried about that being thrown for a strike. That's the 5 walks. So it's really, it can just be one pitch can mess you up, especially if it's the pitch you're working off of, the fastball. And it doesn't matter how fast it is. It matters, you know, you're able to put it where you want to put it, and he just wasn't.
Yeah, I guess Iwakuma has that same issue sometimes. I mean, with him, it's all about commanding the fastball, and then
it's location.
Location,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, for the most part. But Felix throws his breaking balls as balls, and he needs guys to swing at him. And they're not going to if they're not worried that he can throw a fastball for a strike, and he couldn't.
Yeah, it was that was disappointing. It was disappointing.
It was bad.
It was just, yeah, you're watching this guy just get pelted. He can't throw a strike. He looked anything but the guy you saw on opening night out here at Safeco Field. And then Paxton, who wasn't great his first start, looked really good yesterday. I mean, he was dealing. He had the velocity. He had his location. Struck out 7, only walked 1. Made us hit 4 hits he gave up. Unfortunately, one of them was that 2-run home run to Sano, who hit one that just hung over the plate. That was just a hanging breaking ball right over the middle of the plate.
Missed.
About as meaty as you could get, and he ate it.
After 6 games, it's tough to say that a certain team is unlucky, but in years where teams win 90 games, but they're probably only about 85 wins good, things break their way. That hasn't happened yet.
No, that's the line I love saying. Everyone's going to win 60. Everyone's going to lose 60. It's the other 42. Where you need things to break your way, where you're winning games you're not supposed to win.
Right, and maybe half of those 40.
Or in this case, maybe lose games that you're supposed to win.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, your starter went, he gave you enough to win. Yeah, you'd like to see him go longer. He went 5 innings, but ultimately 98 pitches, giving up two runs. And before that moment, he was electric. He was fantastic. It's what you wanted to see out of Paxton. The only thing I would complain about would be, yeah, I'd like to see him be able to be a little more efficient with his pitches and go longer into the game, but he gave you what you needed out of your starter.
Yeah, they hit in a game where their pitcher was terrible, and then they didn't hit in a game where he was great. You probably didn't need to even do that much, but it wasn't enough. I hope that doesn't continue the entire year. I'd rather have a season full of injuries than I would just bad luck. That would be ultra frustrating.
Well, yeah, because you can't explain that. Injuries, you can go, well, come on.
Exactly. At least DePoto's built a team here that should be able to compete. Like, they're actually hitting. They're actually pitching, just not on the same day.
Yeah, and you got hits in both games. Again, 10 hits in the game where they only pushed across one run against the Giants, where they just got their butt kicked. Yeah. And in this game, you only scored two runs, but you had 8 hits in this game. And the guys you brought in, D. Gordon's hitting .400. Segura with 2 hits, 2 for 4. He's hitting .375. Cano's hitting .435. He had a hit. Vogelback's hitting
2 singles yesterday.
Right, 2 for 3, and he had hits
in
the other
game.
He looks
good too.
So he's hitting .333. I understand it's just a handful of games, but
you're fine. You know, most of the indications are good. Look, this team is so far what we thought they would be, a team where you're going to worry about pitching. I think Tom has put his finger on one thing. Their bullpen has to be exceptional, and if it's not, it's going to be difficult.
It's a funny.
And they haven't. And it's only a couple games, a tiny little sample, but right now their bullpen, they're tied. They're tied with about 10 minutes to go in the third quarter.
It's 17-17. Game one.
But right now their bullpen doesn't look great. And so to continue with the analogy, they've carried the ball 9 times for 8 yards,
waiting to break a big run.
They haven't run the ball well.
9 times for 8 yards.
Offensive line's getting shoved around a bit.
I was going to say they got a couple penalties in there.
They need their bullpen to be nails. Right?
They do.
And they're expecting it to be. And it hasn't quite been.
No, except for your closer.
Closer looks terrific. Absolutely terrific. You're right about that.
I think around baseball, I mean, obviously, with starters going shorter and shorter distances into the game here, more and more teams are depending on bullpens. Yet, it's the most unpredictable aspect of your team. So it's funny that we're in this area where it's all about the bullpen, 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 bullpen. But yet, you don't really know what these guys are going to be. The most unreliable part of your team is the part you're relying on the most. It doesn't really make any sense. If what I would do, and I'm not sure how I would create this exactly, I would have a couple of starters who can go 3 or 4 innings. Then I would have more than one reliever who would be like my middle relief, who basically just pick up the job of a starter, but in those innings.
Long reliever.
That's the talk that's going through baseball now.
But those guys are rare right now. Like Andrew Miller is that guy. Right, that's what he's there for. You have to take an existing starter, probably in your farm system, and develop him into that. So by the time he reaches the major leagues, he'll be ready to go in that role. I don't know if teams are doing that.
They haven't proven, though, that there's a guy who can do that. I mean, Andrew Miller does it in the postseason. I don't know when he goes the 2 or 3 innings at a time.
Right, because they're going to pull guys earlier. But they're doing that more now in the regular season, too.
But it's to have a guy make, like, so what you're talking about is a guy making, like, what did Vincent make, 65 appearances last year, something along those lines? That's throwing 180 innings if he throws 3 innings to start an appearance.
I would think it could be more than one guy. And depending on how you want
to
do your roster.
It would have to be.
I would think it'd be 2, and ideally these guys get you to your matchup guys late and then your closer. Because I don't want to bring in Altavilla with the game on the line. If I have to choose between Paxton a third time through the lineup and Altavilla, those are not
Paxton.
Right. Well, they didn't. Yeah, they did yesterday, and then it burned. But I don't like either one of those options. There's got to be a better option.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with him going the third time through the lineup. That pitch hurt him. He had one pitch that really hurt him.
That's the argument against the starters going deeper into the game, though. It's not necessarily the fatigue. It's that the lineup is seeing these guys at the
adjust
time.
To him and everything. And I don't think they were truly adjust. I mean, he made a mistake. I mean, he left a breaking ball.
One bad pitch.
Fat over the plate. I mean, it was just – that was batting practice. So, yeah, he made a mistake. I mean, he gave up 4 total hits in 98 pitches. He was dealing out there. But
what you're talking about, Tom, is a fundamental change to how pitching staffs are used, and I think that's what's going on. I don't think we'll last see it at the major league level, but I bet you that's what organizations are working on now, finding a guy who can throw it 50, go out there 50, 55 times a year, but pitch 2 or 3 innings a time. Out of the bullpen, throw 130, 140, 150 innings. There really isn't a guy that can do that now.
The role hasn't been defined yet,
or created, right. or how do you prep a guy for that? I mean,
I think you take a guy who you think can be a starting pitcher.
Well, it's got to be. He probably does have to be a starter.
Yeah, and then you say to him, "Well, you're not going to actually start the game, but you're going to function as a starter who just happens to be in the 5th or 6th inning."
You may throw 50 pitches every 2 days, as opposed to 80 pitches every 5 days.
Right.
It's a big switch.
Huge.
But I think you'll see it too, and I think it may be the beginning of roster change too. You may need to add to the roster.
You mean like adding maybe
27
one or two spots,
players?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about what's going on with the Seahawks. Apparently, there's a little controversy that's been, I guess, started by the camp of Russell Wilson. They've got questions about how John Schneider's doing his job. They've got questions as to why he would possibly be out there looking at another quarterback when you've got Russell Wilson.
Which he said, by the way, on this radio station. I believe he said it to John Clayton, that he wanted to watch Josh Rosen. He was going to go to his pro day.
Allen.
Or Josh Allen for QB. Yeah. That he wanted to go to his pro day. So
he's done this before. He looked at Mahomes last year. The interesting part of the story, though, to me, is that Russell Wilson's camp, which I think is a funny term, decided to reach out to the Seahawks and say, hey, anything we need to know. And then somehow that got out publicly to Jim Trotter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, why is that happening? I mean, shouldn't that?
Well, there's one reason why that happened. Russell Wilson's camp wanted it to happen.
Right, but why? Because they're trying to position themselves in some way?
It's a good question. I mean, I suppose so. I mean, he's obviously got he's going to have his contract renegotiation next year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Coming up.
You would assume. So the Seahawks now have said that they've got a new quarterback's coach, so someone who can talk to him better, got a new offensive coordinator. Off and off season, they don't want to call it rebuilding, but are rebuilding the roster. And it's interesting to think that this year might be an important year for the future of Russell Wilson with the Seahawks. Now, I don't necessarily believe that. I think that they are comfortable with their quarterback.
I would hope so.
But that's kind of what it sounds like his guys are wondering about.
Now, they could just be insecure, and they could truly be ignorant to it, right? They could be what are you doing? Or they could have put in the question and then floated it out there publicly.
They also saw the Seahawks cut ties with Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
You know, so they've seen him, and they're floating Earl Thomas trade rumors out there. So,
yeah, I don't think they've got any intention of getting rid of Russell Wilson. I don't think I think it's much ado about nothing. To be honest, they looked at Patrick Mahomes. They look at other quarterbacks. I mean, that's what they do. It's what
GMs doesn't mean
do.
That Russell Wilson thinks that. I agree with you, Bob. I don't think you trade a top five quarterback in the league in the middle of their prime while you're rebuilding. It wouldn't make any sense. I'm with you. But if they're trying to somehow drive up the price, they probably value Russell Wilson at a higher number than the Seahawks do. And if Schneider is looking at other quarterbacks, they're probably thinking, well, you think you can do better? I mean, I can see some hurt feelings being there. And this is an interesting point for both guys.
You don't have a backup right now. You've got to look to the future. You've got to be able to look past Russell Wilson if the contract negotiations don't go right.
If Allen's not a backup, he
were to suffer a catastrophic injury, you can't just leave yourself with, well, we've got this guy, so we're going to be fine moving forward.
But I mean, Josh Allen's not going to be a backup. He's not going to sit for very long.
He could also be like the 2013 draft class where they scouted all of those guys and you move forward a couple years and all of a sudden he's available and they go, I remember watching that guy. I liked what I saw, and you couple that with the game tape. We talked to him. He was a great kid, whatever. I think it's just part of a GM's job to do your due diligence at every position. I mean, Schneider talked about drafting quarterbacks every year in Green Bay. They had
Favre. Which they did.
But from Russell Wilson's perspective, they're not going to always look at it from the other side. They're interested in Russell Wilson Incorporated.
Correct.
Right.
So when they see that the general manager is looking at another quarterback, a highly touted one who's supposed to go number one or could go number one, I don't blame them for thinking,
I'm sure the issue here or the story here is that the information got out.
Big part of it. Yeah.
I would assume that in almost any circumstance, they may have asked them last year, hey, should we be worried about this? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if someone who Aaron Rodgers' agents asked the same questions. I mean, you're responsible for your own client. The thing is, it became public. Now, why did it become public?
There's no reason for it to become public unless it's just posturing.
Do they think that is this the beginning? You know, Mike Sando suggested, and others have too. Well, this is the opening salvo in negotiations. Okay, maybe it is.
I mean,
we all know that they're going to be negotiations.
Yeah, and if his camp, and I don't know if it's his agent or group, whoever said leak this out, should we be worried? You know, if you look at the details, you got the 18th pick. You're not going to get Josh Allen.
The logistics of getting him are going to be very.
You don't
very
have
difficult.
A second and third round pick. You don't have the picks in order to move up to get Josh Allen. So, to me, it's just a GM. It's like him taking phone calls. We talked about that. Hey, so and so's calling, wants to know what you'd take for Russell Wilson. Well, you're going to listen. You're going to listen to a conversation about any player. Because somebody might be dumb enough to unload the franchise for somebody. or their next five first-round picks or whatever, something extreme like the Herschel Walker deal, you're not doing your job as a GM if you do not take those calls.
Yeah, but you know what? We went through that whole conversation last year with Richard Sherman, and we all, I guess at the end of it, we concluded, oh, I guess he's going to stay. And now he's not here anymore. The point is
because
that
they
even
didn't
the
get
most-
what they wanted. They had a price in mind. Here's what his value is to us. They didn't get that. They didn't get that offer, so they're going to keep him. Now he's injured. Now he's off a ruptured Achilles, and now they're looking at it as, all right, we've got age, injury, and cost attached to him. So you didn't know what you had. You had somebody there who was looking more punitive in terms of the salary cap, and not understand. All right, we're not going to sign him to an extension.
Yeah, but if you're Wilson's people, like I said, you're looking at the other stuff too. They've changed quarterback coach. They've changed offensive coordinator. They've said they want someone who can communicate better with him. I mean, they've made some noise.
Do you think they've done those for his? They've made those moves for his benefit.
What, the coordinators?
Yeah. Do you think that, and even gotten rid of guys like Sherman and other voices in the locker room that may have been a disruption to him?
I mean, we haven't talked about it, but Michael Bennett in his book glowed about Wilson, a guy who you would have thought because you know Russell was playing on the straight and narrow, and Bennett that he wouldn't have had that sort of opinion of him, and he didn't. I mean, he just said he was the greatest guy, greatest stuff. Spoke out, got everyone's respect. So to answer your question, no.
I didn't think that.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the issue. But you know, they have changed their approach. They are going through a rebuilding process. It's natural to want to know, hey, you thinking about changing our guy's status or anything like that? But it's just surprising that it would have come out.
To me, that's the only surprising part about this is that question that was asked is now public.
Yeah,
the fact that
surprised me.
The fact that they're out there looking at quarterbacks, whether they're out there, they were out there at Darnold's workout.
Or the fact that they asked about it doesn't surprise you either. I mean, that's his agent.
Yeah, so to me, I just don't put that much into it. You know, maybe it is posturing for the negotiation that's going to come up. But, I mean, to me, John's not doing his job if he's not out there at these pro days. That's his job. That's his job. If for some reason, you got to prepare for any conceivable possibility that somehow one of these guys becomes available in a year or 2 years. They didn't work out with the team that drafted him. All of a sudden, you're in a position where you've got salary cap room. You loved what you saw as far as game tape. And, hey, we had that meeting with him on his pro day. Loved everything about this guy. I just think he's doing his job. The fact that it became public, the question that was asked, to me, is the unique part of it. The fact that he's out there looking at a quarterback means nothing to me.
Do you guys think that the 2013 team could have won the Super Bowl without Russell Wilson?
No. Nope.
I think another quarterback could have won the Super Bowl for him, sure.
Like a lesser quarterback? Yeah,
Tavares
Aaron Rodgers probably could have done it. But like
Tavares?
Could you think a lesser quarterback could have done that?
I do.
Because if they
think Tavares Jackson would have won the Super Bowl?
A lesser quarterback. I'm answering his question.
Lesser than Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Tavares would be one. The reason I bring that up is because while they are building this new defense, running game, et cetera, if they think that they can get it back to where it was in 2013, I wonder if they think that they can be a Super Bowl team without Russell Wilson.
Well, they're different now. I mean, now they're built around their offense. They're trying to rebuild their defense.
Well, at the moment, but we'll see how
Russell
the defensive
Wilson,
talent.
Sure, we'll see what they add. But right now, I mean, there's no more important player on the team by a mile.
At the moment, but going forward, I don't know.
All right, coming up, does Tiger Woods still have a comeback in him, or was all that hype for nothing? We'll talk about that next year with Bob Gross and Tom. Coming up in about 15 minutes, which golfer has got the thinnest skin on tour? Wait a minute, what coming your way?
We know the answer to that.
Is it obvious?
I'm sure everybody's got their own ideas to who they think that is.
It seems pretty obvious.
Well, this guy's had thin skin before. But...
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't give it away.
Well, no, we're not. I don't know. Look at the show sheet. I have no idea who it is.
Yeah, half the time you leave it in the other room.
Is that a shot, Bob?
No, it's an observation.
Sound like a shot?
No.
Why do you hate me, Bob?
I don't hate you.
All right.
It was an observation. Half the time you leave the show sheet in the other room.
Float that to Jim Trotter. See what the public makes of it.
Meanwhile, the Masters happening right now. You got a tie atop the leaderboard between Mark Leishman and Patrick Reed at 5-under.
Yeah. Like Patrick Reed.
Yeah, he's electric.
Rory McIlroy.
Rory and Jordan Spieth at 4-under. Vijay Singh. How about that? Sitting there at 3-under.
That's the big Fijian, Tom. Remember the nicknames we were doing the other day?
That's right. That was one. You hadn't heard that one before, had you?
Yes, I had.
The big Fijian?
Yes.
I said the big Fijian.
And I said, no, it's the big Fijian.
Fijian. It's like those Samoans you like to eat.
Right. I get a whole box of Samoans.
So you've got some familiar names sitting atop the leaderboard, but you scroll down to a guy who's having a rough go of it. He was battling yesterday, able to finish plus one on the day, but today not going the way of Tiger Woods, who is currently plus four.
He's about to bogey number 10.
Is he?
Yes, and he was he bogeyed the first hole today, and the key with the Masters is it's top 50 plus ties, but more importantly, it's within 10 shots of the lead. And right now, if he bogeys,
He's
10 shots back.
Yeah. Yeah, so he double bogeyed number 5 and then went par. Where is he at right now?
He's at 10.
He's at 10? Okay. Yeah. So we'll see what he does. I mean, this is he had a lot of hype coming into this based on, you know, he played two separate tournaments and played extremely well in both those tournaments.
Well, you know, you've watched Tiger over the years. You can sort of tell by his body language if he's having a good day or not. And he's showing the negative body language today. No.
He's frustrated.
No mouth expletives yet, but they're coming.
No slamming of the clubs.
No slamming of the clubs yet, but just a lot of,
You know, we talk
Tom
about
thoughts.
Yeah, we talk about momentum a lot in baseball, other sports, and he'd been playing well, as you said. How does momentum work in golf, though? Because, I mean, obviously it's not
really
carrying over.
It's really important on a day like today because there are only like four golfers under par today, so the course is playing really tough.
Mickelson's falling apart. He's plus six on the day.
Yeah, he's four over, and he just hit one,
just
into the
hit
crowd.
One in the crowd.
So it's wind, I think, is what the deal. Whatever the deal is, the course is not scoring well, so you got to change your mindset entirely and think that, you know what, if I can par every hole, I'm having a great day.
I actually feel
your momentum's got to change a little bit because you can't go for it as much. Mickelson's a guy who famously does and is paying the price.
Yeah.
Spieth is plus two on the day. Tony Finau, is that how you say his last name? The guy that dislocated his ankle, who was a great story, right? I mean, we all watched the video of this guy celebrating after he had the hole in one on the par three competition, dislocates his ankle.
Bad luck.
Just bends down like he's tying his shoe and pops it back into place like it happened. And everybody assumed, oh, that must be one of, you know, people have arms that pop out, they pop it back in. Everybody thought it was like a common occurrence for him. He's like, no, not at all. Pain scale, 1 to 10, where was it? 10.
He shrugged it off, though.
Yeah, he was limping after he popped it back in, but then he comes back and plays the opening round of the tournament yesterday, and at one point was the leader in the clubhouse, and he was four under for the tournament, and he's plus two on the day as well. So
if you, that's kind of the thing about the Masters. It keeps you within 10 after the first 2 days, and you can come back from 10 back. It can be done.
Is Tiger going to make the cut here, though? Because they're estimating it's going to be plus seven, roughly.
He just had a good par save on 10, where he had to make about an 8-9 footer to save par.
So he's still plus four.
So he's still plus four. The projected cut right now is plus five.
Plus five? He's got to have a heck of a back nine here.
Well, he's got to par out.
Yeah.
Which is what we're talking about beforehand. He's got to, you know, not go for it. You got two par fives that normally give up a lot of birdies, but you got to be careful on them. That's the mentality for a major.
I actually feel a little bit of sympathy for the people who wanted Tiger to do well in this tournament.
That's like Bob.
You feel bad for me?
A little bit.
Do you? Why?
Well, even though I don't really like the guy, there's no reason for me to like hope that he's not in the tournament, because I'm not going to really watch that much of it anyway. It is kind of disappointing. But Gross and I were talking about Armin Katayan today, who we had on Wednesday, who wrote this book.
Yeah, speaking about disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, think about how his book sales would have been affected had Tiger won this thing.
Yeah.
Right? They would have shot through the roof.
It's still the same thing for the U.S. Open. I mean, he's still in any major that he contends in.
Yeah.
It'll help.
Yeah, and if he
wins
a tournament between now and the U.S. Open, too. I mean, he's just reason to give people hope and get excited about, or if he even plays well, I don't even think he needs to win. If he does what he just did in the previous two tournaments, where he's a top five guy,
if he had done well, sure, I agree. But you know what? Those other tournaments, who cares about? If he plays well in a major, that's a big deal.
That's a really big deal.
But we're just talking the anticipation of him playing in a major. So leading up to it, if he's playing well like he just was, goes to the U.S. Open, there's going to be a lot of eyes, a lot of people. Now, he may fall on his face. Who knows? But going into it, yeah, there'll be the same level of excitement and anticipation of, all right, does he have it figured out now?
But how many times is he going to fall on his face before people recognize that he just can't win a major? Or he can't even compete in one?
Well, he's competing today.
I mean, he's not the only one who's... I mean, you got a lot of big names that are falling apart here. I mean,
it's a windy day. So, I mean, the likelihood is 5-under's leading right now. By the time we're done, I'll bet 3-under's leading.
Okay. I mean, I don't think that the same thing is on the line for those other guys as it is for Tiger.
No,
this was supposed to be
that.
The big redemption.
Well, he's a little ahead of schedule, though.
Yeah, he's only played two tournaments before this.
I mean, he himself was referring to this as miraculous, that he's actually playing as well as he's playing. He's a little ahead of schedule.
That's how you set the bar low, Grav.
That is how you set the bar low. And you can leap over it.
Who did you pick to win this?
Dustin Johnson.
That's who I picked.
Me
about
too.
He's about the Eagle 15.
You picked Dustin Johnson as well?
That game we were playing, whatever that thing is on 710.
That we filled out?
Yeah.
With Premier Golf. Him. Yeah,
we all picked the same guy. How about that?
Without even discussing.
Well, he was the favorite. He's the chalk.
Right. I went chalk the whole way.
I had a few guys in there that weren't necessarily chalk.
Wait, was he the favorite? I thought Spieth was the favorite.
No, Dustin Johnson was the favorite.
Was he?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, because I picked it in that order as well.
Okay. Well, he's 3-under for the day. You said he's lining up for an
Eagle
putt.
Lining up an Eagle putt. So. Okay.
By the way, I went on YouTube last night, and I watched about a five-minute interview with Charlie Rose and Tiger Woods, just to make sure that my
make sure you still didn't like him.
Well, yeah, yeah. And to be honest, coming out of the interview, because it was only from about a year ago, coming out of the interview, I felt like I understood him a little better. But I'll tell you who he reminded me of a lot. It's Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Just the way he comes across, the way he tries to present himself, the way he kind of cracks his corny little jokes like, hey, don't you think I'm funny? Like, he really came across a lot like Russell Wilson.
It's calculated.
Yes.
You don't get a sense that anyone's that they're ever telling you the straight scoop, but they're telling you what they think you want to hear.
Right. I tend to gravitate towards guys who just seem cool. You don't have to say anything outrageous or anything like that, but just seem genuine. And
yeah.
they just don't.
They're few and far.
J.J. Watt.
He's something. He's just trying to impress
he's
everybody.
Something. That guy certainly is something.
Look at me.
Yeah, yeah. Raising money for the unfortunate. Weird. All right, coming up, which golfer's got the thinnest skin on this tour? Wait a minute, what? Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom.
It's Bob Gross and Tom.
Hold up.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute.
What?
It is Wait a Minute What here with Bob Gross and Tom. By the way, somebody texting in, Gross is totally wrong. Dustin Johnson is the world's number one, but absolutely not the favorite to win this week, according to Texter.
Well, when I was in Vegas, he was, so sorry, Texter. But I go by Vegas.
Maybe not at this moment.
Tiger was like the third choice.
At one point, he was number one.
He was.
We got those odds that would have been of interest to us.
He was way too short a choice, though.
Yeah, so
they all are.
By the way, did he sink that putt, that eagle putt?
He did not.
Damn.
And I didn't. I don't know how he did on the
he
on the
stinks.
Putt to follow.
All right, so it's still Leishman and Reed.
It's still Leishman, though.
Is it Leishman or Leishman?
The last two holes, he's done this off the tee on every hole. He's pointed either he's hit his tee shot and immediately pointed to the left. No. And his tee shot immediately pointed to the right.
Oh, he didn't call a shot before him.
No, it's not calling a shot. It's like, look out.
Look
your life is in danger.
Jeez. Duck and cover.
The wind is really messing him up out there for sure.
Yeah, nobody seems to be doing – everybody looks like they're just trying to hold ground at best, except for Leishman, however you say it. He's 3-under on the day. So we'll keep you updated on that. Meanwhile, we asked the question, who's got the thinnest skin on the tour? I don't know if there are official rankings, but my number one would be this man, Sergio Garcia.
He's the favorite for thinnest skin, you know.
Is he the Vegas favorite? You know, it was funny because I was flipping around yesterday watching the Masters, watching the Mariners, and, you know, so I wasn't just on one thing. But I was lucky enough, I guess you could say, to land on the Masters just as Sergio had his meltdown. So I watched it live on that hole. And everybody, it was not a unique
thought. Was Cheech Marin his caddy?
It was not a unique thought because everybody looked at it who's seen the movie Tin Cup and immediately said, Tin Cup.
But Cheech would have tried to stop him.
Cheech did try and stop him at
one point. Right, so.
He says, you get this last one.
He had no choice because he went up to the drop area where you're supposed to hit. So it wasn't like he was hitting three woods the same way. He hit the first one and then he went to the drop area and was hitting him in from the drop area.
But what was amazing is each ball that he hit would land and it looked like a good shot. Like, you know, where it landed in relation to the pin and everything looked like a good shot, and then it would just slowly roll down the hill. And the announcers are, oh, no. Oh, no. You're like, it looks good off the club. It lands. You're going, okay, he hit a nice spot. And then slowly you hear the crowd, oh.
And I think the part of Tin Cup that was true is you get six balls.
And so then what?
Then you're disqualified.
Oh.
Yeah, don't you remember Cheech saying you get this last one wet? We're out.
Okay. I only saw that movie once. I saw it in the theater, actually. I didn't really care for it. That's a legendary scene, obviously.
You didn't like the movie?
I thought it was a good movie.
I thought it was a terrific movie.
Yeah, I really liked that one. But anyway,
everybody was thinking
of that scene because he hit one after another that landed on the green and then would roll slowly, slowly, picking up speed, and then bam, boom, back into the water, ends up with a 13 on the hole.
But then somebody was trying to crack jokes about it afterwards.
Rich Lerner.
And his wife actually got involved.
Yeah, so Rich Lerner sent out a tweet that said, Sergio won't be naming his next kid Firethorn.
That's the name of the hole.
The hole, right. And he works.
That's kind of funny.
He works for Golf Channel. That didn't sit well with Sergio or his wife Angela, who just had their first child and named her after the 13th hole, Azalea.
So, seriously?
That's what this says.
Okay.
So Angela Garcia, his wife, said, "Hey, at Rich Lerner, the next time you decide to tweet about my future child, why don't you use your brain and not do it? Don't be an idiot." At Golf Channel.
There you go, an idiot.
Yeah,
Shut up. Everyone's an idiot.
And then Sergio tweeted out, "What happened on 15 at the Masters yesterday was unfortunate for me and it hurt, but I tried to handle it like a Masters champion should. That same hole gave me that green jacket last year, so we might end up naming our next kid Firethorn after all. Funny, man."
Well, that was all right.
That's actually okay.
Yeah, he put a
sense of humor.
He put the winking smiley face emoji, Tom.
Well, that means it's okay.
It sounds like he's got a sense of humor about it, but his wife did not think that was funny at all.
Well, it'd be hard not to. I mean, take a 13.
Yeah, what the heck? Of course, what are we supposed to say other than to joke about it?
It would be different had he not, I imagine, had he not happened to have won the Masters last year. Remember, he's the best guy not to win a major forever and ever and ever. So I'm sure that took a little bit of the pressure off.
Yeah, coming off a win, it's a lot easier to swallow.
I have won this tournament.
And that's a moment that humanizes these guys that every golfer of any caliber, any level, watching that moment can relate to.
Yep.
Right? Whether you're in a sand trap or you're hitting into water, whatever, you're going, that's the way I play. Except he was hitting nice shots. They were landing on the green by the pin, but rolling back. But in that moment, everybody could relate to what he was feeling.
Absolutely.
And it's weird to see somebody of that caliber, a Masters champion, struggle like
take a 13.
You would, or I would, or anybody would.
I don't think I've ever taken a 13.
I think I've taken a 13 once or twice.
Certain. I've just picked the ball up. I probably would have picked up a 20.
My handicap doesn't allow me to take more than an 8 normally.
Oh, it doesn't allow you? Okay.
What does that mean?
It means I count 8, and that's it. I stop counting. I'm just joking.
Oh, I thought there was some rule I wasn't aware of.
No. No rule.
Yeah, I've had holes I've played, which probably could have easily been a 20 or something. I just picked it up.
Put a check mark and move on.
Let's go, or I'll stop keeping score.
You know what's interesting about what you just said there? We can all relate because we've all made those shots. I've fired a million off into the woods. Golf is the one sport we can do that with, right? Because we've all gone out there and played it and had those type of days. But it's similarly unrelatable when you look at the type of the class of people who are playing golf and who are members at Augusta. Like, the type of people that professional golfers are, very elitist, removed. I'm talking about the stereotype here.
Right.
Very removed from the rest of us, and yet they're relatable in these moments. I think it's just an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Augusta is about as snooty as it gets, right?
It is.
So for people to have interest in what goes on there at all is sometimes beyond me. But when we see guys putting them in the water 5 shots in a row.
That was so weird to watch. It was very surreal. I was just sitting there looking at it going, this is amazing. And you could hear it in the announcer's voice and hear the oohs and ahs from the crowd and all of that nonsense. So, yeah, it was very, very interesting. Meanwhile, something that became a big story after I taped an interview with Dana White, by the way, which we'll post the conversation with Dana White, but that conversation took place before Conor McGregor lost his mind at the Barclays Center. And he just, I'm sure everybody at this point has probably seen the video of him picking up a chair, and it looked like a little piece of a gate in the underbelly of the Barclays Center, and throwing it at a bus that contained a whole bunch of UFC fighters, including Khabib Nurmagomedov, the guy that he was upset with.
What was he mad about?
He was upset because there's video of Khabib and his crew of like about 10 guys kind of cornering a friend of Conor McGregor's, Artem Lobov, who was fighting on this card. And I don't know what it was about, but there's video of him, somebody on his cell phone, where they kind of cornered him, and he was with one other guy. It was like 10-on-2, and they just kind of had him up against the wall, and you couldn't hear what was being said, but it looked like he was kind of bullying him, and that's Conor's best friend. So when Conor found out he was on this bus out there in New York, he was going to be there for his friend's fight anyway to support him, but then when the bus full of fighters came by and he knew Khabib was on that bus, he lost his mind, started throwing things through the window of the bus,
Do you think he was justified
in acting like that?
No, he's going to jail. I know that, but to be upset.
If he wanted to just get up in his face and confront him, I mean, it was kind of weak to have that many guys there backing your play.
If it was 10-on-2 and somebody was really bullying your buddy, I mean, there are situations where you might want to get involved there and just say, hey, let the chips fall where they may. I'm defending my buddy.
And he wasn't there when that happened.
Right.
These are two separate incidences. So he was responding to that and unfortunately lost his mind, threw things through the window, which cut other fighters that were on this card. They've been pulled from the card. You had two other fights drop out because of this. I mean, it's just
this is a crime.
Oh yeah, he's been
arrested.
I'm reading everybody that's actually at the courtroom saying Connor just entered the courtroom. They showed him leaving the police station in handcuffs, the whole thing. So he's got charges. He's going to be in trouble.
Do you think he'll apologize?
I think, but
will it be forced?
Doesn't matter.
Well, all I've ever heard the guy say, he's always talking jive to somebody, like how much better he is than everybody.
Jive.
Yeah,
he's not a humble guy. In other words,
no. He plays a character because I've interviewed him in person and on the phone. When he's in that setting, he's a really smart, thoughtful individual with his answers and everything. He's very aware of how he's perceived, and it's worked for him.
So he's on the level existentially.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
But this moment, there's no excuse.
Okay.
There's no excuse for it. So we'll see what happens to him. But that was a really poor choice on his part. And Dana White's distancing himself from the whole thing, saying, I'm not going to be there for him. Would you want to do business with it? He's not saying he's not going to ever fight in the UFC again, but he's just like, he's saying it's the worst thing he's ever seen in the UFC. I mean, he's ripping him. He's not standing up for him.
I heard that's what Russell Wilson did after he found out Schneider was looking at Josh Allen.
Is that right?
He went to the Seahawks facility,
started throwing stuff through buses and
his Mercedes.
Oh, jeez. What a disaster. And again, my conversation with Dana White will be up there after the show at 710sports.com, but keep in mind, it took place before any of this nonsense took place. So we obviously did not touch on that. Or we did touch on the fact that Max Holloway decided to take the fight on 6 days' notice and how great that was. He's been pulled from the card.
You're talking about a theoretical match.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about a lot of things that aren't happening. But, it'll be up there for you. Meanwhile, we're going to do Have an Opinion Already coming up. You can start texting in your questions right now on any topic, any subject. 710-710 is the Coors Light text line. We'll get to your questions. Also talk about some of the shortcomings of this Mariners team that we've seen so far this season. All that coming up with Bob Gross and Tom.